Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Nearly 2,000 households that contacted the housing charity Threshold between April and June this year were at risk of homelessness. The findings were published yesterday as part of the charity's impact report, which showed tenancy termination being the biggest issue facing their clients. I am joined in studio by Anne-Marie O'Reilly, Threshold's National Advocacy Manager. If you have any questions for Anne-Marie, please get in touch by emailing todaycb at rte.ie or by texting 51551. Good morning, Anne-Marie. How are you? The biggest issue you continue to deal with is tenancy termination. What are you able to do for tenants in this situation?
So in the first instance, we'll ask a tenant to send us in the notice of termination they've received, because you actually have to have it in writing. So it can't be a text, it can't be a chat over the phone or a chat on the front doorstep. So if someone hasn't actually got something in writing, well then, that's not a notice of termination. You don't have to move out. If they send it into us in writing, then we'll have a look at it and see, does it line up with what's in legislation? Because depending on the reason for the termination, the landlord has to do certain things. So if they're planning to sell, well, they need to provide a statutory declaration setting out that intention. They need to give a certain amount of notice to the person and various bits like that. So we'll have a look at that and let the person know, well, it matches this or it doesn't line up with that in the legislation. And then the person, you know, will talk to the tenant about whether they want to speak to the landlord about themselves, do they want us to do it, would they like to lodge a dispute with the RTB. Now, if, however, it is in line with legislation, the landlord is within their rights to end the tenancy. So in that situation, it's just making sure the person has the time. If they are entitled to additional supports, maybe they could access HAP, which might give them more purchasing power. Perhaps the local authority will buy the property and let them go into a tenant in situ scheme. And it's directing them to other options.
And where you are able to help people to secure somewhere else to stay there, how often are you finding alternative accommodation for them, or how often do you find yourself renegotiating that rental rate?
I'd say at about half, at least these days, it's actually probably about half the instances people stay in the home and the others.
But at an increased rent?
Oh, not always. It's not always at an increased rent, because rents have to be increased in line with legislation. So it's not always at an increased rent. You know, a few years ago, we would have had a lot more people actually staying in the property, whereas now we do see a lot more landlords ending it for legitimate reasons. So people have to find somewhere else. And unfortunately, it is actually quite difficult for us to find something for somebody, but we'll give them as much information, knowledge that they need to go out and do that.
Yeah, obviously still very difficult to find places for people. Are there parts of the country where it is getting better, where it is easing up, or is it still as bad as it was 2-3 years ago?
I wouldn't say there's anywhere where it's necessarily easing up. You know, we're only a couple of, like, you know, policy and things like this move very slowly. Trends like this will take a while to see them develop. And we're only a couple of years kind of out from COVID now. We're only starting to see the increase in housing delivery, but that is positive. So, for example, there's a lot more cost rental coming on board, and we keep an eye on what's coming up, and we'll direct our clients to that if they're eligible for them to apply for the likes of that.
No quick fix solutions here, but there are things that you would like to see implemented that could help improve the system.
Yes. So essentially, we see the need to actually change the way the housing system operates. And we want to move to what's called a unitary housing system. So basically, that just means that the social and cost rental housing sector would get bigger. At present, only about 13% of our housing stock is social or public housing. So it would get bigger to about 20-25% of stock. And that type of housing would become available to a much broader cohort of the population. And essentially, it creates competition with the private rental sector. Renters, people going out looking for home, will have a bit more choice, and that will force the rental sector to become competitive.
So that's the threshold, is it? That if a quarter of all houses are in the social affordable bracket, it means that pressure ends up coming on landlords to reduce rents.
Yeah, offer more competitive rates, offer better value for money. Yeah, so that's essentially what
it sounds like. A very wonky solution. How do you arrive at this figure of 25%?
Oh, so it's what we see it in other countries. So like the likes of Sweden, Netherlands and so on and so forth have these unitary housing systems. And it's at that 20-25% that the balance is tipped. But it's very important that is sustained and maintained. So we can't get to 20-25%, think, oh, that's it now, and sort of let that housing then start dropping in proportion to the rest of the housing sector. So we are hopeful that we will get there, but it certainly requires deliberate policies to get there. We can't just get there by chance.
Time was when people had difficulties with landlords, you would think that they would be in that kind of 18 to 25 or 18 to 30 cohort. Not the case any longer.
No, that's actually makes up quite a small cohort of our clients. And you'll even see it in the CSO figures. That cohort's much smaller in the rental sector. It's the 35s and ups actually make up about 50% of our clients these days. So we have a lot more people than maybe we would have had 5-10 years ago, a lot more people now with children, people in 40s, 50s, and people who are in retirement as well, who now find themselves renting and likely doing so for life.
I was going to say, what are the long-term social consequences of generation rent now, including people who are approaching retirement?
Yes, that, and that's a piece we looked at with a loan last year, at that from people from the age of 45 up who are renting now, who may want to buy, but that the chances of doing that deteriorate as time goes on. So people not feeling they have solid security. If they have children, will the children be able to do the communion from that area? Will they be going to secondary school in that area? And then people who are hitting retirement are already in retirement. Perhaps they can access HAP to help pay the rent. But if there's a gap between HAP and the rent, well, that's putting a big demand on their pension.
It's a really big risk, isn't it, that there will be no retirement for generation rent?
Well, that's it. Like, you know, people will have to make those decisions when the time comes, and people may find that they can't reasonably retire.
Okay. Let's turn to some of the listener questions, if we can, please. We've had a lot of moths this year, says this caller. They could cause a lot of damage. Whose responsibility is it to pay for pest control?
Yeah, so that's a bit of a tricky one. So in that instance, you'd actually have to determine what caused the moths. So what we'd suggest is have a chat with the landlord, arrange for a pest control company to come in and have them determine, you know, what was the cause. If it was a result of maybe inaction by the landlord or the property being in a poor state of repair, it would be the landlord's responsibility. If it was down to some fault on the behalf of the tenant, it would be their responsibility.
Or what if it's Mother Nature? Act of God, you know, or you're not able to determine.
Well, if it's an infestation, like I presume it's ongoing, you know, whereas if so there's a cause to it. But I suppose I'm not an expert in pest control.
No, sorry. It's a bit unreasonable to expect you to be. But there would be an outlay there getting a pest control person in.
Unfortunately. So that's somebody's going to have to pay for it, you know, to even determine the cause. If the tenant does end up paying for it and feels it was actually the landlord's responsibility, they can then go to the RTB to look for those costs back, because the landlord would be deemed to have failed in their obligations.
Who wants to go to the RTB to sort out something small like that, though?
Well, I suppose it depends on how much money it was and what damage was done.
I am renting from an institutional investor, and they say that I can't break the lease before 12 months. I don't think this is like a usual lease where you can get out of it by giving notice. What is your advice?
So it sounds like this person is in what's called a fixed term lease. Now, we'd have to look at the actual lease agreement to know that for sure, but that's what it sounds like. And if you actually end a fixed term lease early, you could be liable for the remainder rent for the remainder of the lease period. So in some cases, a landlord will agree for a tenant to end the agreement early if they get a replacement in, or an agreement might have a break clause in it, which allows the tenant to end it early. But if it's just a standard fixed term lease, then technically you are liable for the full lease period.
Okay, in that case, it's probably clear then that you would be liable. But there is a principle law, isn't there, that you can't sign away your rights no matter what you sign. So if a landlord starts sneaking in all kinds of onerous things into the conditions of a lease, even if you have signed it, that can all be challenged, can't it?
In this particular case, you wouldn't actually be signing away any rights as such. It's just that you've signed a different type of agreement.
No, I didn't mean in this particular case, but as a general principle.
Yes. Oh, yeah, in general, yes, definitely. So if there's anything in your agreement that contravenes the law, it doesn't stand, whether you signed it or not. So you can totally challenge it.
Okay. Whose responsibility is it to take care of the garden in the property that we are living in? We have grass, we don't own a lawnmower.
So sometimes, yeah, there is an assumption it's the tenant's responsibility. But if you haven't been given a lawnmower, you can't be expected to purchase it and go about cutting the grass. But ultimately, if you want to get down to the technicalities, it's the landlord's responsibility. They have certain obligations to ensure the property is maintained to a certain order. And in the guidelines from the Department of Housing, that includes the upkeep of the garden, shrubs, other vegetation, so on and so forth. Yeah. So, but we'd find in most cases a lawnmower has been made available and people are happy enough to go out and mow themselves.
Well, you could just leave it for the bees.
Yes.
Dangers of going out of lease. Often this happens at the end. I mean, is there really a problem with going to month 13 or 14 at the end of a 12-month lease?
No, absolutely not. And you actually, in fact, don't even need a written agreement to be protected by the tenancy legislation. So in Ireland, once you've passed the 6 months, you are technically going into what's called a Part 4 tenancy, whether you have a lease agreement or not. And if you entered that tenancy before the 10th of June 22, you're now into a 6-year rolling tenancy. Mm-hmm. If you entered after that date, you're in an indefinite tenancy. Now, the landlord can still end the tenancy on certain grounds. You know, they're selling it, they want to move back in, so on and so forth. But no, the fact that you're now into month 13, 14, 15, 16 doesn't matter. You now actually have an ongoing tenancy.
But you are also entitled to a lease agreement. And
if you want that, yes.
I rented a house to tenants. So this is from a landlord, obviously. I rented a house to tenants 2 years ago for a period of a year with an option to remain for a second year. They were planning to move out, but now, after 2 years, have indicated that they wish to remain in the house. At the time the rent was set on the low side of the general rent for the area, the property is not in a rent pressure zone. I have advised them that the rent will have to increase to the prevailing market rent for the area if they wish to remain. I'd like to know, is this the right thing to have done?
So the outside of rent pressure zone, yes, a landlord can increase the rent once in every 24-month period, and it has to be in line with market rent, and they have to demonstrate that it is the price, similar price on comparable properties. So if it's a two-bed apartment, they can't be putting it up to what a three-bed semi down the road costs. And they have to give it in writing and give appropriate notice.
Okay. Does a rental property have to be registered with the PRDB? If not, is the landlord risking a fine?
Yes, yes.
And is that the case for rent a room?
No, rent room is different. That doesn't come under
the PRTB.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Okay, thank you very much for joining us with that, Anne-Marie.